Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, Stu, what's your motive?
And now on Blog Talk Radio, you're listening to Wine Talk with Stu the Wine Guru.
Welcome to Wine Talk for today, Wednesday, January 13th, 2010. It's 7 p.m. Eastern, and I'm your host, Stu the Wine Guru, coming to you live from sunny Coral Springs, Florida, as I always do. As you know, I will take your calls anytime during the show at 1-646-381-4860. Or email me your questions at info@stuthewineguru.com, or go into my chat room here on the show page and chat with other wine enthusiasts, or ask me any questions you like, or whatever you want to talk about in the chat room, go for it. I want to say thanks to all the listeners out there for getting the word out about my show. Welcome to all of you listening worldwide. I call that the power of the internet meets the power of the people. If you want to find out more about me, just Google Stu the Wine Guru. You can find the websites, videos, articles, and shows I'm currently part of. Speaking of articles and reviews, I'm writing wine articles and reviews for Yahoo, The Examiner, and Google, so look for those. I've also made a Wine 101 series of videos that can be viewed on both YouTube under Stu the Wine Guru or my website, at www.stuthewineguru.com. So check those out. My latest installment in the Wine 101 series, Wines of Australia. I review Peter Lehman's Clancy's Red Blend, which is outstanding. Great red wine and great value at about $13. All right, let's talk wine. We have got a fantastic show for you tonight. Of course, the number to call in is 1-646-381-4860. Or if you're shy and you prefer the computer, email me your questions at info@stuthewineguru. As always, I've opened, as I mentioned earlier in the show, a chat room for the listeners to go into and chat amongst themselves about wine, ask me questions, or answer the question of the night. And I'll check in to the chat room live periodically during the show. Later in the show, my question of the night is, I wish I had a drum roll. Next time I will. What do you remember about your first time trying wine? Okay, go back into the recesses and the memory banks, knock off the cobwebs, and get ready on the phone, get your fingers on the keyboard, and weigh in on that one. We'll talk about some industry updates in my segment called Heard It Through the Grapevine. After that, I'll give you my review of great value-priced wines. When I say value-priced, I always want to say let people know that value-priced to me is anywhere between, let's say, $10 and $30. Today's wine is a great wine from France and around $30. You'll want to stick around for that. I'll make some red and white wine recommendations in my segment Stu's Pick of the Week. Also, in my segment Stu's Restaurant Pick of the Week, I'll be making a restaurant pick for you, so when you travel, I'll have a spot for you to go to that offers great food and great wine as well, so stay tuned for that. But first, I have an announcement to make about an upcoming show. As you know, if you've gone on my website or if you've heard me talk on the show before, I've mentioned this. I had started in the music business back in the 90s, and I worked for over a decade in it with Warner Music. So I consider myself a bit of an audiophile when it comes to the music knowledge that one would have. Recently, though, I had the pleasure of corresponding with a very influential and historic music personality. She worked on big albums for musical acts like Nilsson, Elton John, David Bowie, Bob Marley, Robert Palmer, and Ringo Starr. That's just to name a few. She's most well known, though, for being a companion, an inspiration, and a muse. And she helped out with the recordings of The Walls and Bridges and rock and roll albums of, yes, John Lennon. Of course, I'm speaking of May Pang. May will be my celebrity guest on January 27th show. So, mark that on your calendar. Don't forget to call in and ask her questions about the music business, her book, Instamatic Karma, which, by the way, is available on Amazon.com, about her time living with John Lennon, her career. I mean, you also, if you want to, you know, think about it. You can ask her whether she prefers a Cabernet or Chardonnay, but, you know, we'll get into all of that. All right, now on to my Heard It Through the Grapevine industry updates. This article is from Wine Spectator. It's called A Pink Tide. It's by Robert Camuto. And here's an excerpt. Across France these days, it's not difficult to find winemakers suffering from the latest chapter in their country's wine crisis. Years of declining domestic consumption, and now a global recession and a euro so pricey it's killing exports. It's killing exports, not experts. Yet, producers in Provence are experiencing a boom. All thanks to a class of wine that has now often gotten very little respect, rosé. A new study by the Nielsen Company, released by the Provence Wine Council, shows a 28% jump in imported rosé sales in the United States in the past year, a category led by France, with the 28% of the world's rosé production, and specifically Provence. The growth in imported rosé sales is nearly 8 times faster than the overall growth of wine sales in the U.S., and according to Nielsen, it's part of a trend that's been accelerating for the 5 years the company has measured rosé consumption. On the domestic side, rosés are down. The growth is specifically in imported rosés, says Danny Brager, vice president of Nielsen's beverage alcohol team. Overall, U.S. wine consumption continues to grow because people see it as an affordable indulgence, says Brager. While some classes of wine are falling, especially wines priced over $20, other varietal niches, such as Malbecs and Rieslings, are growing. Imported rosé is hitting a sweet spot of consumer trends. An increase in drinking moderately priced wines at $10 to $20, wine pairing with lighter world cuisine, and a thirst for dry white light wine. Okay, my thought on that. I agree 1,000,000%. I know you've heard me say it before. Wines that are under the $20 mark during this recession are the wines that people are drinking in great numbers. The people that used to drink, you know, $25 and $30 bottle of wine, and they'd spend that on average for a wine, will now spend only $15 to $20. But they're still demanding good quality and taste. You know, the public is getting it. The rosés priced from $10 to $20 are cleaning up in the wine retail atmosphere. They're a great alternative for everyday drinking and light fare wines. You can pick the French like Igigal or the domestic like Mer Blanc and keep it within your price range. Igigal is about a $16 or $17 bottle of rosé, and the Mer Blanc is about $10. All right, the next update is from Wine Spectator as well. It's called Turn, Turn, Turn. U.S. Wineries Try Wine, Wind Power by Dana Nigro. Here's an excerpt. When planning his new Anaba winery in Sonoma's Petaluma Gap, proprietor John Sweezy had to give very careful consideration to how to situate the tasting room's outdoor space. Strong winds come off the ocean two-thirds of the year, and the hills around this his site act as a funnel. On a windy day, it's not fun to be out there, he said. Without the shelter of the building and protective glass partitions, if guests step outside, the wind will blow off their wig off. Excuse me. The wind will blow their wig off, or at the least, the wine out of their glass. That's exactly what prompted Sweezy to put up a sleek 45-foot-high wind turbine on its 16-acre property in December, making Anaba the first winery in Northern California to do so. He estimates he will save about $1,000 a year on electricity for his tasting room, offices, case storage, and irrigation system. The turbine is connected to the utility grid, so when the wind produces more power than Anaba is using, it's sold to the power company, offsetting the winery's annual bill. The economics worked relatively well, says Sweezy, who named his year-old brand after a type of wind. With a federal tax credit and a state rebate covering half of the expense, he expects the SkyStream 3.7 turbine, which cost $21,000 with permits and setup fees, to pay for itself in 8 to 12 years. If all goes well, Sweezy hopes to add more turbines along with solar power when he builds a new production facility. Okay, my thoughts on that. I am all for any renewable source of energy that decreases our carbon footprint on this earth. I think that this is a great idea and a long time coming. This marriage of solar, windmill, and wine, making it a great marriage of ingenuity and practicality. Remember, if you have any questions, I have answers. So call me at 1-646-381-4860, or again, get into the chat room like Felix is right now and voice your opinion. Of course, you can always email me your answers, your questions, your requests, your opinions to info@stewthewineguru. I'll get those and I'll read them on the air as quickly as I possibly can. So now let's talk about some great value-priced wines. Today's choice is from the Rhone Valley of France. It's a 2005 La Fiolet du Pape Châteauneuf du Pape. This wine is a well-balanced Châteauneuf. It's great red blend of Grenache, Mourvèdre, Cinsault, and Syrah. The notes on this are spicy plum flavors, and the average price you'll find this for is about $29, which is, in all honesty, inexpensive for good Châteauneuf. So if you go around looking for Châteauneuf, and you're probably going to spend on average somewhere around $45 or so and up. But to find something that's actually really good tasting, and under that mark, this is really probably one of the best to do that. And also you'll find something very, very cool about the bottle. What they did was they twisted the bottle a little bit, and they gave it this glazed on, dusty, celery look, as if you just took it out of the cellar. And the funny thing is, when people put this bottle in their hand, the tendency is to want to blow off what they think is dust or wipe it off, and it only takes one time to realize that that's actually glazed on the bottle. That's the actual look of it. So it was a very clever idea, marketing-wise. I have to give them a lot of credit for that. On to Stu's pick of the week. Actually, before I do that, I see Felix has put some stuff in here. You have to agree with that article. I've been tasting more and more great rosés from Spain and France every time I go to the store. Okay, well, Felix, you're definitely going to find that. In fact, as I mentioned, the Gigal is only about $17 if you want French rosé. And if you want a inexpensive, basic rosé from California, there's the Mer Blanc, which is about $10. And you also went on to say in the chat room here, that the first time I tasted a wine, you're answering my question. All right. Well, all right. We'll go to the. I'll go to his answer here, but this is very interesting. Let's see. Felix puts in here that, and let's see. The first time I tasted a wine was a Chardonnay on Thanksgiving Day way back in the 70s. My father traveled to California all the time and was impressed with the wine there. All I remember is how buttery and smooth it was eating with the turkey. Okay, yeah, that would make sense. And then you said, I don't remember the vineyard. I was only 24. Oh, wait a minute. 14 at the time. Now, that doesn't surprise me. I have very close friends of mine whose family is directly from Italy. In fact, they were born in Italy. And when they came over, nine sisters, including my friend, she would drink wine that was made directly from their father, who made wine all the time, and it was just a given that you drank wine. There was no stigma attached to it. So very interesting there, Felix. Okay, on to my pick of the week. Every week I choose a red and white wine that I recommend for the weekend or any occasion. This week's red is a 2004 Viramonte Primus. This is from Chile, and the notes on this are a blackberry and cherry flavor, very smooth tannins. The nose on this is you'll get mint and some tobacco. And the beauty of this, you'll find this for about $20. My Stu the Wine Guru rating on this is a 92. I think this is really an outstanding wine for $20. You want to go out and you want to find a nice blend that you can drink with anything by itself, or you want to just drink it with a good any type of beef dish. But, you know, it's really, you can go to town. You got chili, you've got beef, you've got pizza, it's very, very versatile because of the different grapes that are in the wine. So, again, and for $20, it's a good deal. My white wine pick of the week is a 2007 Marcus de Riscal Rueda. This is a Verdejo from Spain. Notes on this are lots of fruit, very low acidity. You're going to get, it's pretty crisp and light, and you're going to get a little bit of maybe some, believe it or not, a little bit of melon on the nose. And you should be able to find this, again, remember I talk about the value price range for me? So I went from a $30 Chateauneuf to a $10 Verdejo. So you can see that I can show you on both ends of the range. Now on to my restaurant pick of the week. Okay, so tonight's restaurant is from Naples, Florida. It's called Little Italy. The address is 2096 Tamiami Trail East, Naples, Florida. If you want incredible, authentic Italian cuisine, and you go to Naples, drive directly over to Little Italy. Don't stop. Stay on Tamiami Trail. Keep going east. You'll find it. It's under an overpass. That's the only way to put it. I think the overpass might be 95 or 75. Don't hold me to that. However, just as the name sounds, Little Italy gives you ideas of New York and Little Italy. It is that good. Great eggplant parmesan, chicken dishes, pasta, nice atmosphere. It's quaint, it's casual. And nice wine list. You definitely do not want to miss the opportunity to try this place. The average entree is between $15 and $20. You want to call them in advance? 941-774-6060. Tell them Stu the Wine Guru sent you over there. And you're in for a great treat. In fact, you look up on the wall, if you're a movie buff, you'll notice that they have a few pictures up there, and one in particular that struck me was of Joe Pesci, who was there with the owners, and he stopped in there and took some pictures. And so it wasn't only Italian actors. There was plenty of other people up there, but that struck me because, you know, being from New York, New Jersey, the Northeast in general, you know, we kind of pride ourselves on the ability to detect really good Italian food, food in general, but Italian, especially because of Little Italy in particular. A lot of good pizza places, famous, a lot of good Italian restaurants. So, you know, going in there, I'm very skeptical going anywhere for Italian food because I always think I'm a little, spoiled, if you will. I'm always thinking that, you know, no one can make any as good Italian food as, you know, the Northeast. However, this on par with some of the best restaurants that I have been to. And I can tell you, I've been to ones in Toronto. I've been to ones in California, Northern and Southern. I've been all over. I've been obviously to ones in Italy. But this was just really, really good, authentic Italian cuisine. So that is my suggestion to you. Get to Little Italy if you're in Naples, Florida. On to my question of the night. All right, from the top of the show. Question of the night at the top of the show. What do you remember about your first time trying wine? Okay, so we heard in from our pal Felix right there in the in my chat room that he was 14, not 24 at the time, and he tried some Chardonnay that he liked. That went well with the turkey. Was smooth, buttery, sounds good. I've got I'll take your call at 1-646-381-4860. Or for all of you out there that are shy on the phone, don't like to talk, but we'll email their answers. Email them to info@stewthewineguru.com or, as Felix has done, get into the chat room. Tell me your story. I want to know. What was the first time? What did it taste like? What was it that you drank? Who are you with? Almost like the FBI here. Okay. I can see some email answers on this one coming in, so let's see what we got here. And the first one is from Wine is Fine. I like that one. That's a great name. You know, the cool thing is that I'm noticing is that a lot of the people that email me tend to have names related to wine. I don't know why that is the case. It just seems to be the situation, but that's good because there's a lot of people out there that like wine. From Sheep's Head Bay, Brooklyn. All right. Hey, Brooklyn is in the house. By the way, just the reason why I said that, if you've listened before, I lived there for a few years, way, way, way back in the 80s. Okay, so Wine is Fine says, great show. I remember as a kid, about 7 or 8, my parents, being from Italian lineage, had made wine and served it practically with every meal. If I would have let them, it would have been cornflakes and Chianti instead of milk. A kid, but I remember drinking it at a young age because everyone in Italy did. No stigma, just expected. I didn't like it at first and grew to enjoy it in my adult years. I will keep listening. Your videos are great too, Stu. Saw them on your website. Cool stuff. All right. Well, hey, thanks, Wine is Fine, for your email and your compliments. Okay, early childhood memories, that's good. That's a little crazy, but, you know, listen, I understand that completely. Everybody drinks and tries things at different times in their lives, so no problem there. All right. Okay, on to the next one. It's from Just for Laughs from Paris, France. All right. Paris is in the house. And it says, Stu, great job with the show. I love listening even if it's late for me here in Paris. Okay, yeah, it's got to be, I don't know, something like 6 hours difference? 7 hours? 6 hours? I am an American transplant here and love it. My earliest memories were in high school, getting someone older to buy my friends and I Boone's Farm sweet-flavored wine. Oh, man. Hey, Felix, chime in on this one. Do you remember Boone's Farm being from New Jersey? It was very cheap and easy to drink. It wasn't until I went to college at Penn State. Hey, Penn State, all right. Back in the early 80s that someone poured me a cab and said, try it. And I said... this is great. I said that the wine has gone bad. It tastes bitter. And then I realized what real wine tastes like. By the way, I've tweeted your show address to all of my Parisian and American friends here in Paris, and they listen too. Well, hey, I want to thank you for that email, just for laughs, and keep the tweeting going and compliment Go White Wines. You love them. All right, let's see. Last one is from Ichi Wine from Kyoto, Japan, and it says, wow, Japan, I'm loving this. We've got everything going on. wait, I just want to... this is great. Felix goes, ugh! Boy, that was bad stuff, Stu. You know it. It was horrible. It was sweet-flavored wine. For all of you out there who've never maybe tried Boone's Farm wines, it was like flavored wine. They had like strawberry. Back me up on this one, Felix. They had strawberry, and I think they had grape. They had like all these different flavors. It was just ridiculous. And it was just, you know, look, if you're drinking beer and you wanted something different and you wanted something with a little bit more of a kick because it probably had 13 or 14% versus your beer back then, which 3-4%, it gave you a nice buzz. It was inexpensive and it was quick. And if you wanted something sweet instead of something bitter like beer at the time, that's what people drank. Oh man, that kills me. That brings me back. Okay, so last one is from Ichi Wine from Kyoto, Japan, and it says, Stu, you are very knowledgeable about wine, and I am a student here at the university. Okay, Kyoto University. We are trying to learn about wines to try, and you help us very much. My first wine I try is a Chardonnay. It feels just like you. It was much different tasting from sake. Oh, yeah. Chardonnay and sake, most definitely different. I like it, and then I try Red Merlot. Okay, well, yeah, there you go, expanding your palate a little bit. It was very good, too. Thank you. We stay up to listen to you, and we'll continue. Wow, all right, so I'm trying to think. I got to look and see what the turnaround time is in Japan, but thanks, Ichi, and konnichiwa. Finally, my thoughts on the subject. Wait, what did, okay, wait a minute. Felix added a little bit more to that. Worst wine I tasted as a kid was Blue Nun. You could taste the... You're killing me. You could taste the yeast. I don't know if they put yeast in that, but Boone's was like soda with alcohol. Yes. Felix, you were right on the money there. Boone's Farm was like soda with alcohol. It was just like grape pop or grape soda, and they added a little alcohol to it. Yeah, definitely. I'm 1,000% behind you on that one. So, let's see what my thoughts on the subject were. My first experience, I will abbreviate the story, but I was at a summer party right after high school. I was 18, and in New York. And in New York, it was 18 to drink, so, you know, you could. I wasn't doing anything illegal at the time. Not to say that I didn't earlier, but we won't go into that. I tried it, let's see, at the party, someone brought Sutter home. I'm sure you can all relate to this. It was white Zin. And the reason why I tried it was because a very attractive girl at the party offered it to me. And I could not say no. I had found it way, way too sweet. Going back to the same Boone's Farm idea and Blue Nun. Way too sweet. And I told her I would stick to my beer, you know, thanks anyway. I was a big beer fanatic from 18 to my early 20s. I was always like, the imports. Like, I never cared for domestic beers. It wasn't until I was in Northern California when I was like 30, I was offered like a really smooth Cabernet that it all changed. It's amazing what, 12 years' time from 18 to 30 could do to you. You know, you change your whole palate. I mean, I swore off wine from, like I said, from 18 probably to that point. And then I was working for Warner Music. I think I may have relayed the story, but I'll make it very short and sweet. I was working for Warner Music. I was out in Northern California, somewhere around San Francisco. It might have been San Rafael, I think it was. And I went out with a prospective client, and I was, you know, courting this client because I wanted to get their business. And we were at lunch, and I was buying, and the prospective client said, hey, you know, why don't we have, you know, we're having some steak here. Why don't I order a Cabernet Sauvignon? Yeah, oh, all right, whatever. We, you know, when in California, do like the Californians. So he ordered me this cab, and, you know, shame on me for not remembering the first real wine that I experienced, you know, this many years later. but I don't remember it. I just remember it was an extremely smooth Cabernet. And I thought to myself, wow, okay, this is not what wine tastes like to me. This is not what I remember it tasting like. And even though it wasn't sweet, and even though, you know, it was, you know, not that I preferred sweet, but even though it tasted completely different than anything else I had tried, it was, you know, world-changing. And thus, there we are from 1995 to now, 15 years later. Amazing, right? Well, let's see. Just checking to see if we have any more emails coming in. I don't see any. Tonight I'm going to do a 30-minute show instead of a 45-minute show. But as I mentioned to you, I want to make sure that you have on your calendar that the 27th, January, not to say that you shouldn't listen to the next week's show, which is the 20th. It's going to be a good show. But the 27th, again, my first celebrity guest, I'm going to have on May Pang. And if anybody remembers, if you're old enough or if you are a little bit of a historian with music or if you were a major Beatles fan and a John Lennon fan, you're definitely going to remember May Pang. May Pang was integral to some of the best post-Beatles music that John Lennon wrote, in that she was his companion during that time, The Walls and Bridges, and the Rock and Roll album. Not to take anything away from his Fantasy and, you know, the other albums that he did post that, you know, right before he died. However, those two albums were great work. He worked with a tremendous amount of other artists, was inspired to do so through May Pang. Like, he worked with David Bowie. He worked with Eric Clapton. He worked with a myriad of tremendous artists post the Beatles and during this time, which was, just so you know, this was during the early 70s, you know, right after the Beatles had split. And May Pang's got a phenomenal story. I mean, she has a great story, and she's been influential to many other artists post that point, you know, after John and Yoko got back together and all. And she worked in the music industry again after that and worked with a lot of, like I said, I had mentioned earlier on, you know, Robert Palmer and David Bowie and all luminaries of the music industry. So I am really looking forward to that interview. I think it's going to be fantastic. And let's see. Wow, okay, Felix, right on, man. Felix just chimed in and said, met May Pang years ago here in New Jersey at a Beatle Fest. Very cool gal. Well, you know what? In my talking with her and my correspondence, I find her to be, you know, fascinating and really, really nice. And I think it's going to be a great deal of fun to have everybody call in, chime in, ask their questions. Of course, Felix, I'm telling you, you don't want to miss that. You want to definitely chime in and ask some of your questions if you want. Certainly from the chat room, I'll urge you, if you want to put a voice to your chat keyboarding, you definitely may want to call in. That might be a show you may want to take the time. Obviously, if you had gone to a Beatle Fest, I don't need to say that you're obviously a very big Beatles fan, as I am. Very influential. I was a musician back in the 80s. I was a bass player and played out in California. I lived out there for a while, and in Southern California, in Malibu for a while, in West LA, and did all the pay-to-play like everybody else did during the late 80s. In fact, I came up doing original, kind of a classic rock kind of sound, original, almost like the Wallflowers. If you remember, if anybody remembers the Jacob Dylan, Bob Dylan's son, has a group, or had a group, I don't know if they're still playing, I don't think they are, but the Wallflowers, they haven't really recorded much recently. But back in the late, let's say, 94, 95, they had a couple of tunes that were really, really big. And that was our sound circa 1988, a little before our time. Not too many people were interested. Why? Because a little-known group came up through the clubs called Guns N' Roses. And that was basically it. Everybody wanted to hear that type of music, which I love. In fact, I love Guns N' Roses. I think they're phenomenal. But I remember seeing, if I was playing at, Madame Wong's on a Friday night and pay to play and getting all my friends together, Saturday was Guns N' Roses. Now, I'd never met them, so I don't profess to know them, but I love the music. I'm especially being an audiophile, I think it's phenomenal. And, Nutmeg. Nutmeg came on into the mix here. And she's saying hi to us, myself and Felix in the chat room. Anyway, so as I was saying, musically, it's a very big deal for me to have a chance to talk with someone like May Pang, who has not only knows of, but has been involved in some of the albums, helping to create it. So that's it's definitely cool. And, I also want to say to Nutmeg, who just came into the chat room, cool that you stopped by. I see that Felix is letting you know that, too. Just so you know what the question of the night was, Nutmeg, it was what you remember as your first experience in trying wine. So if you remember that, you want to chime in on the either by phone or you want to put it on in the chat room, go ahead. No, it's okay. You see, I missed most of the show. No, we're still talking here. No problem. We got time. You can if you want to ask some questions, Nutmeg, you can ask some questions. Not a problem. You can ask it in the chat room if you'd like. But the question was of the night, what do you remember as your first experience? Felix chimed in about trying Chardonnay. His dad brought home when he was a teenager. Champagne. All right. All right, so tell me a story here, Nutmeg. Come on, you can't just put one word. Tell me about it. So you tried champagne. How old were you? Where was it? What happened? I'm going to let her answer in the interim. So, mark on your calendars, January 27th, May Pang. And in addition to that, you can go online to www.stewthewineguru.com. Check out my videos. Also, the articles that I've written for Yahoo, for Google, and The Examiner. Also, you can take a look at some of have a wine library that gives you a grape and varietal that you can check out all the different notes and things about all the different grapes and varietals that exist. And let's see. So in answer to my question from Nutmeg, she said, I asked about the champagne, and she said, I remember drinking my mom's cheap champagne when I was, when I was in high school. Okay, so you have a high school situation as well. And my sister opened the basement door and was like, you're disgusting. I laughed even harder in her face. This is a great story. I like this. This is great. Okay. And let's see. And I was drunk as hell and only 17. Hey, listen, everybody. Know what happens. It was like $2 a bottle. Real cheap stuff if you're young. Yep. Well, we all can relate to that. We all had our story here. champagne, Chardonnay. Let's see. Mine was a white Zinfandel, as I mentioned earlier. So just so you know, Nutmeg, to bring you up to speed. Anyway, so I think we're going to end the show tonight on that note with a few minutes left. I want to thank everyone who listened in and emailed their questions. As always, if you have any questions about the show, you can email them to info@stewthewineguru.com. You can go to my website as well at www.stewthewineguru.com. And click on the link for all of my wine articles, videos, and you can listen to archived wine talk shows at the website. As well, of course, if you want to go to blogtalkradio.com/StewTheWineGuru, you can listen to them there as well. As I always say in all of my shows and to everyone that I speak to when I do wine tastings or when I'm at a party and I'm making a toast, if it's time to pour the wine, it's time for Stew the Wine Guru. drink up, good night, and good wine.
And now,